You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble.
Hello and welcome to episode 25 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
And I'm back. I'm Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Rathroid, still here.
Yeah, we've managed to assemble everyone together this week, funnily enough.
Avengers Assemble.
We've got several things we want to discuss news-wise this week, and we're going to be talking about MMORPGs and MMOs a bit at the end of the show. But first up, newsy things. So you might remember last year we talked about 2000 AD apparently maybe having a gay Judge Dredd storyline. Well, that played out last week in 2000 AD's latest prog. And basically, should I class this as a spoiler? Just not really a spoiler? Yep. I don't know.
No. Do it just to be on the safe side.
Okay, this is a spoiler. You should probably stop listening for about 5 or 10 minutes or something. Okay? All right? Well, you don't want spoilers for last week's prog? You gone? Yes? Okay?
Oh, I'm leaving. We never wanted them anyway.
Yeah. Okay, so last week's prog, basically this main storyline for the Judge Dredd sort of section was about a young guy in Mega City 1 who was sort of had some issues at home going on or something, but was sort of slowly coming to terms with his sexuality, i.e. he's gay.
Goodness.
And basically, like, a part of the sort of issue sort of took place in a sort of fetish club that was illegal because it had people dressing up as judges in it and villains or outlaws. And obviously the villains outlaws was fine, but it's the fact that dressing up as judges is kind of illegal and all that.
Impersonating a judge, etc.
Yeah, and so basically the picture of like what looked like Judge Dredd kissing a punk was basically somebody dressed up as Judge Dredd. It wasn't Dredd. It wasn't even his clone, like we might have speculated last year. You know, it was just somebody dressed up as Dredd in the club, kissing a guy. And basically, yeah, it's just this whole fetish thing about, you know, good cops and robbers, basically, in Mega City 1.
I feel a little bit disappointed with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think because I read a blog post or something that was over on SFX, and the person that wrote it was kind of like, well, yes, they didn't make any grand big statement with it, because basically, like, by the end of the sort of story, the club's been busted, because obviously it's illegal because of the dressing up thing, not because of the homosexuality thing. They're fine with homosexuality in Mega City 1. So it's busted up because of the fact that it's illegal on the dressing up as judges front. And it was kind of like, but nothing was like really big and shocking or anything about the story. And the guy writing on SFX about the prog was like, well, actually, that's a good thing, because too often at the moment, homosexual storylines or sort of like LGBT storylines in comics and other mediums are treated as a big deal. And actually, at the end of the day, really, it just needs to be treated as if it's just an everyday normal thing, and that it's just a normal part of whatever fictional universe is going on at the time, and technically an everyday normal thing in this world.
Yeah.
And so that actually the sort of not being really loud about the whole issue in that prog was just because it's just an everyday occurrence in Mega City 1. It's nothing special. The thing that's more at question is like how the guy that sort of like is featured in that particular story sort of is dealing with coming out and getting comfortable with things.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's not like a stupidly big issue for the general society in the story. So
which is good.
Yeah. Mm. So Judge Dredd isn't gay. But at the same time, the guy kind of argued, well, you wouldn't know anyway, because his sexuality and everything is just so repressed he could actually want to dress up as a woman and date guys for all we know, but we wouldn't know because he's married to the law and everything's kept way down. So yeah.
He is a judge.
Yes.
He is the law.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So no, there's no issue, and that's fine because it's set in Mega City 1 where the only issue is law and order.
Mm.
Yeah.
And the sexuality thing wouldn't be an issue, would it?
No.
No.
I actually really like the idea that the only issue they have with it is impersonation of a judge.
Yeah.
That's it.
I think clearly, you know, the Denizens of Mega City 1 really...
Denizens.
I'll pronounce it correctly someday. Them peoples in Mega City 1 should perhaps rethink... I mean, yeah, it's great having that, you know, judge fetish, but there are safer things to dress up as.
Yes.
But again, I suppose you wouldn't want to dress up as a mutant either, because that probably wouldn't go down well either.
What you could do is you could dress up as a 20th century UK judge, because then, you know, you were like, what?
I hope that the semiotics behind the word judge and their interpretation of it in Mega City 1 doesn't apply to guys in wigs, because that would be problematic if you did have a fetish for that. But there's judges.
Oh, horsehair, so Tesco value.
Freshly grown on the burbers.
Yes.
So Judge Dredd isn't gay. People can stop sounding the sirens, the klaxons, the whatevers. And yeah, it was actually a good example of just treating any sexuality as something that's normal. I want to now draw people's attention. We're outside of the spoiler zone. If somehow you were listening but had it on a lower volume, outside spoiler, we've gone past the spoiler. Other bit of news.
The spoilers are now back in the box.
Yes. Black Mirror, the TV series sort of put together or constructed by Charlie Brooker, is back on our screens on the 11th of February on Channel 4 at 10 p.m.
Woo!
Who watched the first series?
I did.
Me.
Is it just Cookie?
Nope.
It's just Cookie. Okay. So, for those of you who aren't aware, the first series of Black Mirror followed... No, was it three different stories?
Yes, it was three different stories set at what seemed like three different times. Obviously, each making different points. Basically, they're kind of unconnected stories.
Yeah.
So they're almost like the TV equivalent of like short story compilation.
I'd say that they're a little bit sort of near future Twilight Zone or Future Shock from 2000 AD. That kind of idea.
Definitely. I mean, the first series there was a sort of questioning of the YouTube era, then issues about sort of personal technology, and then further questioning over what was the fun episode? That was the reality.
Hard drives in the head.
Oh, was it hard drives in the head? Or was it hard drives in the head? So that's the personal.
One of them was like a reality celebrity.
Yes. That was the one most further set in the future as well. Well, possible future.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's really good speculative fiction. Really good. The first episode is probably the most disturbing.
It is in a way.
Yeah.
I'd say Cameron wouldn't do that. He wouldn't do that to save a princess.
No. Let alone the Queen.
No.
No.
Cameron would just hang him up and say, I am the king.
Apparently Brooke has written more of this series, the second series that's coming. And he kind of said that in an interview, he said that the sensation of dread, it has been spread differently between the episodes this time around. Like the first series, everything was pretty, this is horrible. Why would you want to live in a world like that? And at least one episode in this series, it's more kind of like,
It's more of a kind of utopia that slowly goes wrong, I presume.
I'm not quite sure if that's the right description, but basically the sensations of fear, dread, and panic that you may have felt during the first series are going to be sort of spread differently this time around. But it's definitely worth watching. I'm not sure if the first series is available on 4OD.
Oh, yeah, it definitely is.
Is it definitely?
It definitely
okay,
is.
Okay, well then, there you go. If you're in the UK, go watch on 4OD.
Nice.
Which would be your favourite then?
Right. I was saying that I'm not entirely sure which one's my favourite because the stories are so kind of different between each other. I think possibly to a certain extent the hard drive in the head one.
Yes. Actually, that would be my favourite as well.
I like the YouTube one.
Which one would that be? Would that be the celebrity one or the relationship?
This would be the prime ministerial issue.
Yes.
That would be my favourite one.
That was a good one. I did like that one.
Yeah.
But I really liked the idea of, for anyone who hasn't seen it, like Cookie.
Yeah, just keep going there, don't you?
Well, there will be some people who haven't seen it, and this is a good opportunity for you to go and, you know, watch one.
Yes, I will do.
So, with this, the third episode was the idea of what if you... It was like the ultimate extension of things like Twitter and Facebook status updates. You know, people blogging their lives. And it would be... you could record everything. And instead of having to remember it, you could just access it with a little remote.
That sounds cool. I need that.
And it all starts to go wrong when this couple go to a mutual friend's dinner party.
Uh-oh.
And there's something that's happened between his girlfriend and, one of the men at the party. And it all sort of just it gets worse and worse.
It unravels.
Yeah, it's this kind of idea of obsession. You know, you've got so much data and, you know, you're kind of looking at the facts and, you know, when memory becomes fact, then it just kind of screws you over, really.
Yeah. Okay.
You cannot kind of forget.
I think we've convinced people enough that you should go watch Black Mirror when it comes out on the 11th and watch the first series now on 4OD. Good news is that you don't need to watch the first series in order to appreciate the second series because, as we said, they're not linked.
And when's that? February the 11th?
Yeah, the 11th of February, 10 p.m, Channel 4, Black Mirror.
Okay.
Okay.
Watch it this time.
Yes. okay, so the most kind of vague, but it's probably quite obvious what kind of news or announcement it's going to be that happened last week, if I want to be even more vague, is that Sony made an announcement that there's going to be an announcement on the 25th of February.
Woo, the PS Vita 2 is coming out.
No, it's a pink PS3 Slim.
No, the PS Vita Go.
It's an even slimmer PS3.
It's the Vita Go without any card slots.
The PS3 Micro.
Yeah, that would be perfect.
Actually, there was a PS Vita announcement today, and that's that there's a silver version coming out. I got tweeted at with a Ice Baby themed Vita tweet.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, by Captain Raccoon. I'll get him for that. I said everything. Was it Captain Raccoon? No, it was Dax Halo or something.
Yes.
Dax Halo. Yeah, sorry, Captain Raccoon. No, Dax Halo. Yeah, I said everything's cool and okay. But actually, I will get you one day for that. The pun will come back to haunt me.
You'll get him next time, Gadget. Next time.
So, really, what's probably going to be announced on the 20th of February?
PlayStation 4.
There we go.
Yeah.
It's either that or it's going to be that they've brought on... they've managed to... do some cloud-based gaming system, and it's going to rival on Live and everything else. And
lol,
five years too late.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was that whole let's buy. They bought Geico last year.
No, it's going to be PS4.
And if any of the rumours that I've seen and the supposed leak specs are in any way accurate, which I've got a feeling they are, there's a reason they bought Geico. in that the PS4 is pretty much just like the 360, the 720, whatever you want to call it, Xbox 3. It's going to be pretty much just a highly integrated PC.
Yeah.
Well, I'm actually quite excited. I mean, it's going to be good to have some new hardware to save up for. And
if you think about the hardware that we're using for the consoles now, I'm not counting the Wii U because I just don't.
Okay.
Looking at the sales figures, very few people are. It's like Nintendo. You know that price cut. You need the price.
Also, I think they need better titles to draw people.
Yeah, you need the price cut and games.
They will come.
They will do. Two's going to be soon, isn't it?
Yeah. But by the looks of the specs that are going around, both of the new consoles are going to be based on kind of laptop, but not quite multi-core AMD PCs with AMD GPUs. There's going to be no cell whatsoever by the looks of it. So that'll be why they've got Gaikai. They'll be porting PS3 games, and they'll probably be offering some kind of cloud service.
The only thing that sort of got me a little bit on tenterhooks is the fact that a lot of these leaks are also pointing the way to the fact that the PS4 is going to be more aimed at social gaming and media.
Ooh. Oh, that can die.
To be honest,
that might be the death of the PS4.
I mean, to be honest, I can't imagine Sony being too vested in social gaming at the moment of the what we were supposed to refer to as the Facebook variety, if the fortunes of Zynga of late are anything to go by.
But Zynga's the future. Remember that?
So, I mean, it's going to be nice. I mean, I am still sceptical about whether, because that came about, what was it, 8 hours after the announcement that GTA 5 had been...
Yeah, they've been delayed again, and now it's, 17th of September?
Yeah. I wonder why that could possibly be.
Yeah.
I am wondering whether they're going to be releasing that on the PS4, to be fair, as a launch-up title. But then I think, going by the Sony's last few big launches and their lineup, it might not.
I mean, the idea of the next console sort of generation on that end being really... online based in terms of actually trying to get at content really annoys me, because there's just certainly in the UK and the rest of Europe, I mean, despite what claims may be made about broadband, actually access is really patchy, and with service providers always going, you get download speeds up to blah blah megabytes, and it's just like, well, no, this is really naff, because if next generation's all download base, actually, is anyone going to have the connection necessary to get the content? I mean, this is why I've always objected to the idea of OnLive.
Yeah, there are large chunks of the US, for God's sake, are either without broadband or really very patchy.
Yeah.
You know, put our patchiness to shame, and that's saying quite a lot.
And I would have thought somewhere like Australia can't be that better off compared to America either. Really, with patchy coverage.
No.
So there's huge swathes of market. I mean, I'm assuming they'd want to sell in Russia. I'm sure Russia, I mean, what with the vastness of that country, that can't be too fab either for coverage.
No, I mean,
If
the most horrific thing I ever, and I'm in quite a good area for broadband, was Grand Theft Auto 5.
Do you mean Grand Theft Auto 4?
No, Gran Turismo 5, sorry.
Yeah, okay. Oh, there we go.
Yeah, that's the one. But it was such a nightmare to actually get the thing installed. It was 2.5 hours of updates just to get it installed on the PS3. And you had to install it on the hard drive.
That's another thing. If you're talking about the PS4 being so, online-based, look at Sony's record doing internet.
This is true.
And networks. It's just whenever I mean, if I play a game on the 360, I know it's just going to be, you know, quite quick if it requires an update. It probably will, but it'll be quite quick. If I play something on, you know, on the PC, I know Steam will have started, you know, grabbing the patch as soon as, you know, I loaded up Steam. On the PS3, even though I'm on PlayStation Plus, so that's supposed to uncrap it slightly. It's still phenomenally slow. And I don't care what anyone says. It's not my broadband speed.
Well, it can be, because my Xbox 360 will update within a couple of minutes.
Yeah, but the comparison is the PS3 is the issue.
Yeah, but that's what I was going to say. But my
PS3, yeah, but saying it's not the broadband speed. You can be using broadband absolutely fine in the evenings. It's not like my broadband's in a slow to a crawling.
No. That's what I mean. It can't be. It can't.
Evenings. But if I want to grab anything off PSN, yeah.
It takes forever.
Yeah. On an evening, it's murder. One time when I first got my PS3 and I was updating MotorStorm, it took 4 hours to get halfway through a patch and then quit. You know why?
Oh, that's so annoying.
The battery ran out in my controller, so it cancelled the update.
Oh!
What? Oh, yes. You've got to have the... It's always
it made so much sense.
It's always best with the PS3. If you're updating and you've got a low battery on your controller, you need to plug it in, because if not, it will just cancel the whole thing.
That's mad. It doesn't make any sense.
The Xbox manages to not do that, I just want to say, for the record.
But then... You can tell in some ways, you know, in other ways with Microsoft, you can, you know, yeah, you know, Microsoft has its flaws.
Yeah.
But with the 360, you can tell they are a software company and, you know, they approached it
in that way
because the, you know, the way that, you know, the 360 does a lot of its online stuff, like chat and groups and updates and things like that, they make a lot more sense than the way the PS3 does it. And so far as I don't have a Vita. But
the Vitas are actually quite quick. That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, they've learned.
Probably be your broadband. The PS Vita, I can have the updates are pretty quick on that. I mean, the PS Vita had an update the other day and it took a couple of minutes to download. I switched my PS3 on, okay, for the first time in a couple of months, fair enough. And I was sat there waiting to play Assassin's Creed 3 for a good hour and a half while I went through so many updates. I was just sat there thinking, why am I doing this to myself? I want to play, and I can't, because it won't let me.
I mean, it all really makes me wonder about, I mean, people have, like, thinking, well, okay, so Sony's investing in the hardware that's going to be shipping into people's homes. It's like, well, they're investing their hardware at their end to make sure that these services run.
They must have.
They must do.
It's just the improvements they've made to the PS3's firmware since launch. I wilt off my cap to them. You know, they've done a bloody good job in updating and in improving it. But when it comes to the infrastructure and the way it does updates, like it has to download an update and then it has to install it and then it downloads the next one and then it installs it.
Yeah.
And yeah, that I don't know why they haven't been able to patch that out. Surely there should be a way for them to improve it. It boggles my mind.
Unless it is the hardware that's restricting them. That's the thing that I can. That's the only plausible thing I can think of, is there must be something in that hardware that actually makes it a little bit more complicated than it possibly should be. If that makes, you know, especially
quite possible.
The PS Vita there, and it's downloading a lot quicker, which it does. I mean, the PS Vita has a group chat. You can talk to people while you're playing other games in a group.
Madness.
But the PS3 doesn't. Hello. What?
But you see, the thing is, no one wants group. No one wants group chat. If you ask the the Sony fans on forums, no one wants party chat or anything like that. Until they have it, in which case it will be an excellent feature that they're really glad they have. but when it comes to the hardware announcements, the whole thing is just how much of the specs that we've seen around are actually nailed down. Because in a lot of ways, the two machines look very, very similar.
I
think I will anticipate the announcement with a slight sense of dread.
For me, unless it's actually going to do something unique and different, hardware doesn't really mean much. you know, it's the games, you know, it's the
Oh yeah.
You know, what people have actually managed to do with, you know, the hardware, that is actually the important point.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of more looking forward to E3 this year, because that will be interesting.
Yeah. Well, if the machines, if at least one of them is announced, then great. But of course, the big thing about a console release is that it standardizes the base hardware that a lot of people will be aiming at. I remember seeing that with, it happened with PlayStation games. The PC got a lot of PS1 ports.
Mm-hmm.
And then the PS2 came along.
Yep.
And suddenly you saw a lot of PC games improving because they had a higher target. And that's happened each time. So, you know, the PC benefits from that. The PC's got its own, you know, range of software and things that, you know, the current consoles can't hope to do.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to be suddenly going from half a gig of RAM to about 4 gig. And instead of DirectX 9 level GPU hardware, we're going to be having DirectX 11 multi-cores. So we're going to see, you know, a leap in what the games, you know, can aim for, because they know they're going to have the install base on PC, and they're going to have the install base on, you know, both main consoles, because they're so, you know, they're going to be so relatively close in hardware.
Mm.
So we'll be doing a lot, you know, we'll be seeing a lot more benefit from them.
Definitely.
It does make me wonder, though, how close to kind of realism that they've actually managed to make stuff, you know, because I think, yeah, with the 360 and PS3, you're looking at just almost like one step off realism half the time.
They've done amazing things with the hardware.
Absolutely.
You look at games that came out, you know, in the last few months, and then compare them to launch games for both consoles, and the difference is amazing.
But that's the thing, isn't it? They always seem to get the best out of the hardware by the end of its actual life, which is a bit of a shame.
Oh, yeah, because almost because they have to.
They have
to have something, you know, more to sell, but they can't actually, you know, just say, can you not install more RAM? Because, no, we can't.
I'm going to move us on now to our last news item. It was announced today. Deadline got this first, but I saw on IGN. Thunderbirds is coming back in 2015.
No.
Thunderbirds are no.
F-A bloody B.
It's ITV Studios sort of in charge of things, and it'll be on CITV when it's finally put together. But it's two New Zealand-based studios that are actually going to be doing all the animation and stuff, which has left me wondering if previous claims about the current state of media production in the UK being unfavourable to animation has made this a favourable outsourcing project, basically, to another land. I mean, because obviously with the tax breaks announcement that came last year, which obviously everyone jumped about because it mentioned games, it also included animation in the various tax breaks kind of legislation that they were trying to push for. I'm not sure how far that's gotten since. I only know what's happened with games. But I'm not entirely sure. Because obviously all the tax break stuff like that has to pass a cultural test due to EU law. So how you'd apply that to Thunderbirds in order to encourage it being produced over here. Unless, of course, you just say Thunderbirds is quintessentially British due to Lady Penelope. And
the thing is that Thunderbirds was always a bit weirdly American anyway.
Yeah,
so
because all the, like, Virgil and everyone had American accents.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it was odd. It was, Amer-English.
Can I just say that I would find it far more interesting if it was actually done by Matt Stone and Trey Parker?
Well, I believe they probably have the greatest level of expertise when it comes to string puppets on this earth at the moment. The greatest level of expertise.
And dexterity.
And dexterity, yes. Cool. And this is the point where I remind people that my ringtone is America, fuck yeah. And which really encourages me to answer my phone as quickly as possible, especially when in the presence of children.
Sort of action dive across the room.
Yeah, it pretty much is. Though, speaking on the puppets front, and this is a quote that I found from somebody involved with the creation. Apparently, the new series will be produced using a unique mix of CGI animation and live-action model sets, while also paying tribute to the legacy of model locations from Anderson's original. So it's not going to be puppets, really. It's...
Oh, what?
Yeah. I mean, what would they mean by model sets?
If think about it, like Red Dwarf, it started out with models and whatnot.
Mm.
Yeah.
So perhaps they just kind of want to get the old kind of feel back to it, but kind of want to do
retro feel.
Yeah, but obviously with almost every kind of way of doing things, you're going to have limitations. So maybe that's what they're going to use CGI for.
I suppose, yeah, it'd be easier to do models of the actual crafts compared to the actual characters.
Mm.
Because the puppets were actually quite complex little things, actually, when you got down to it. Oh, and I suppose that means there probably won't be any, like, actual human hands standing in for puppet hands whilst opening cases and looking at watches.
I was going to say that because the original did have a weird mix like that, because it would be, you know, any close-ups of controls or watches or anything like that, it would be, you know, actors' hands.
But that gives it some of its charm.
It does.
I also...
In fact, going back to what Emily was saying, I mean, how many British animation studios are there actually left?
Aardman.
Aardman.
Is Cosgrove Hall still around?
No, I don't think it is.
Oh.
Because they did a Count Dracula.
I think Aardman's kind of clinging on, and there's like a couple of, like, there's a fair few sort of like regular production studios that have got like animation facilities, at least for computer graphics.
Yeah.
To an extent, in my experience. But I don't know if there's really many that are sort of outright animation anymore from still animation or cell animation.
No.
Which is a huge pity, because we've got such a... Well, we did have such a talent pool in this
country.
We did.
Yeah.
I mean, we had Danger Mouse. Yeah, Danger Mouse.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that was Kids Grove, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they did... Yeah, sorry, Kids Grove. They did Count Dracula as well.
Yep.
And we had the guys behind Will O' the Wisp.
Yeah.
All those old TV series, In the Herb Garden.
Oh, yeah, Parsley the Line.
Wombles.
Yeah.
Camberwick Green. Ivor the Engine. Yeah.
Big Bertha.
We've got a big history.
Yeah, Fireman Sam.
Yeah,
that's still going, isn't it?
Hasn't Fireman Sam gone CG?
Yes, Fireman Sam is CG. I can confirm this. It's along with like Thomas the Tank Engine, which is being made in the US now, and has the bloody engines talking and in CG.
What?
I refuse when I'm over this.
Isn't Ringo Starr doing the voiceovers anymore?
No,
he hasn't done it for years.
He hasn't done it for ages. But no, the Thomas is a shadow of his former self. Bob the Builder's CG now as well.
What?
I don't think it's clay anymore.
What about Postman Pat?
Unsure. He might have been CGI-ized.
So he got fired in the cuts, and he's now having to work in Soho.
Yeah.
Along with Jess.
Oh.
Oh yeah, double act.
I mean, I find the timing of this announcement quite interesting because...
right after Thingy Bob died?
Yeah, Jerry Anderson. Yeah, he died last month. Well, last month or sort of end of December. So I find the timing somewhat suspect, which, is like, were they just waiting for him to
almost
die?
Almost if it was a... Yeah, you can do it over my dead body. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean... It's quite a while off anyway, because, I mean, it's airing in, 2015. It's only just 2013 now.
Yeah, but I mean, leave it alone. Come up with something bloody original, will you?
Do something different. I don't want a new Thunderbirds. I want something different.
I mean, part of the charm of Thunderbirds was, like a lot of sci-fi from the time, was that stuff that they were doing hadn't really happened yet. It wasn't completely plausible, and the world of technology has changed drastically.
Yeah, they had a rocket which could go into outer space when they were just starting to do rockets. And that kind of thing.
Yeah, and spaceflight seemed a little bit more plausible, and having a decent space station that really isn't a tin can floating around the Earth seemed a bit more plausible.
Yeah, so it's just...
The tech...
Stingray.
Yeah.
Stingray.
Does that mean Stingray's going to come up next, you know?
Oh, Joe Nani.
Do you know, it wouldn't be so bad if they did remake sort of like Thunderbird, Stingray, and Captain Scarlet, and somehow Captain Scarlet obviously has had a recent animation series anyway, but if they could somehow just bring the three together for some kind of epic series of crossovers, that was always something I wanted as a kid.
And they bring Terrorhawks back as well then.
Now, you see, I really liked Terrorhawks at the time,
well.
But I've got a feeling that if I saw it now...
No, don't. I watched it a couple of months ago. Still good. Sergeant Major is still good.
Do you know what? If
that,
what would have been a better series to remake in terms of its grasp of technology and ability to be applicable to today, Joe 90 would have made far more sense as a series to remake. And make it applicable to kids. It would have been far more plausible, especially like you could have tied it in with something that was a bit like, I don't know, sort of Google's Google Glass or something, and you know, you could have still had like the big, huge machine that kind of helped the process and everything. You know, you could have done things like that, and it still would have worked. For sort of storylines.
What they'll probably do is, if Thunderbirds are a great success, what they'll do is then they'll just go back and remake everything else anyway.
Yeah. What about UFO? If anyone's actually seen that.
UFO, that rings a bell in the darkest recesses of my mind.
Live action.
There was one actually that had, that was set out in space. I can't remember what it's called now, but it was all puppets, but it had a bit of a sort of Japanese feel to it.
It wasn't space policing, was it?
No.
On Fireball XL5?
Yeah, that's older than Thunderbirds, that one, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It might have been space policing. It was basically the big baddie. I can just remember the big baddie because he used to be a big, evil-looking woman with sort of cyborg bits on the face and a red cowl over her head.
Ooh.
No.
I can't remember.
That doesn't ring a bell. I'm sorry.
Galaxy Force or something.
That's... Oh. I'd have to look that up. I don't know if that was a Gerry Anderson.
Because, like, in the later years, once they stopped actively making stuff, there were the odd sort of few things they were involved in.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we mentioned Space Precinct. That was one of his, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah,
yes, it was.
Bloody awful.
I'm
not a fan.
So sum it up. Thunderbirds is coming back. You have to wait to 2015 if it doesn't somehow get stuck in a form of development hell.
We can
as Gerry Anderson's spirit rises from the dead and haunts the studios, screaming and wailing in the halls. No.
Filming has been postponed because Gerry Anderson has risen from the dead.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Yes. Okay, so we said earlier that we were going to spend part of the show today talking about MMOs, or specifically MMORPGs, and what may or may not keep us playing them, and if any of us actually play any on a regular basis. So is anyone actually currently actively playing an MMORPG?
Nope.
As a no from me.
Nope.
Retroid.
I'm kind of slightly dabbling in Star Trek Online because I am a big geek.
Is this because you got offered shiny things to go back near it?
They said, oh, look, you can have a free ship. And they've got Denise Crosby as Tasha Yar / Sela, the half-Romulan daughter.
Ooh, have they?
Yes, they apparently they have.
Oh, they haven't emailed me about this.
With a special mission, and it's just, can I put up with all the clunkiness that I encountered when I first tried dabbling with it a few months ago? And the answer is, I sort of kind of can, but I don't know if I'm going to.
It's supposed to have improved. I mean, I haven't touched it for about 8 months, to be fair. And then it was slightly better than the last time I tried it.
Bearing in mind I only had the smallest of dabbling with, was it EverQuest? EverQuest? Whatever the hell it was.
EverQuest?
Yeah.
EverQuest. only sort of slightly dabbled with that ages ago when I got a freebie month as an offer. And ran around pretty much saying, hello, I'm new here. Can anyone help me? And most people ignored me. One person stabbed me to death. This is awesome.
That happened to me when
I'm going to delete the client now.
I tried World of Warcraft many, many moons ago when they were doing the 14-day free or whatever. I know it's free to play now. Because a lot of friends were on about it. Yeah, come on, level up. We'll join our clan and level up and we can take on the wizard service. Yes, exactly. So I jumped in one Sunday afternoon. I thought, yeah, go on then, let's have a go. And all these people appeared and they went, join us. I was like, yeah, okay. And I followed them and they killed me over and over again.
Awesome.
And I was just like, well, that was a waste of bloody time, wasn't it? I'm going home now. Bye. It was just a case of, what the hell?
Yeah it's just, to me, MMOs, when I was little, it would be, imagine what it would be like if anyone, no matter where they were in the world, could inhabit a virtual world just on their computer and talk and interact with people from anywhere else. Wouldn't that be awesome? And you go, yes, it would be, says little me. And you go, no, it wouldn't. Just look at comments on YouTube and on the online, and any games forum, and imagine what it would be like with sharing a game world with those people.
Yeah. I think
if they can hit you.
I think the most romantic interpretation or visualization of online MMOs sort of thing is what happens in the .hack manga and anime, and the games, the original games, because that was kind of like, it was a partially submersive technology that was used, so you kind of got sort of really good sort of headset visualizations and stuff, if I remember correctly. And at the same time, it was like, oh, you know, apart from the fact that the story of all of it is about stuff, bad things happening to people in the world and that, but actually if the game was working absolutely fine, it's far beyond what any MMOs managed to sort of dole up so far and just kind of give people. It was far more submersive as an idea than anything currently on offer, and also incredibly easy to do. And highly expansive as well. Nothing's quite reached what .hack kind of put forward, basically. At the same time, I really like playing the games that. So I like playing a simulation of an MMORPG. I don't necessarily like playing MMORPGs.
Yeah. And I have to say, from playing a few hours now of Star Trek Online, it just seems quite old and quite clunky. And I don't think that's specifically Star Trek Online. I think that's more to do with MMOs and the nature. You know, just the way they're all, we know this template works. We're going to stick to it.
The only one that's really captured me. Which is really sad. Is DC on Universe Online?
Yeah. I've always sort of, I've looked at that a couple of times. Like, do I want to give it a go? Because haven't they gone free to play to a certain?
They've gone free to play to a certain level now.
Yeah.
But I was lucky enough to get a pack sent to me, so I tried it for the first month. I'd have to say it was actually quite amusing because I didn't actually really play with anybody. I was just doing the missions by myself, and I quite enjoyed it. I saw everybody else running around doing the same mission. We helped each other out, and that was fair enough. They went on their way. I went and flew off into the sunset. And I thought, this is cool.
Thing. And, you know, playing Star Trek Online, I've not played with anyone else. I've just gone and done, you know, missions, which is, you know, kind of what I want in a game anyway. It is weird going to the Earth starbase.
Okay.
And you see lots of Vulcans running around, leaping over sofas, and jumping off balconies because they want to get to wherever they want to go in the fastest possible way. So they just run and leap, and it's what? This is a bit peculiar. Not to mention at the minute that there are massive balloons all around the space station. So yeah.
I think my brief brush with an actual MMORPG, not a simulation of one, was last year I tried EVE Online for the first time, which is really going in the deep end when it comes to MMORPGs. It's not the most user-friendly of games.
Yeah, and that's the sort of elite-y type one, isn't it?
It is supposed to be the dog's bollocks, isn't it?
it was good, and apparently, like, they were sort of claiming last year when was it Inferno came out or something that we're making it more user friendly, and there's the whole sort of tie up that's happening with Dust 514 that's on the PS3 and I suppose when I originally played it, it was, apart from the fact that it was a bitch of a thing to update.
That seems to be a thing.
Yeah, it was kind of like I couldn't ever really get it to update, just update and then go play it. The updates would usually go completely absolutely wrong and I'd have to reinstall or something.
Oh, God.
And I originally tried playing it through Steam and had to give up, like, because I had a trial for 14 days. It just wasn't happening. And then I managed to get it working from getting it directly from the site, and it was just kind of like it still had issues of updating, but it tended to resolve. But at the same time, I was downloading gigabytes upon gigabytes of data, trying to get this bloody thing to work on a restricted connection anyway, because we've got a download limit at the moment. And it was a pain in the ass. And when I finally got to play it, I found that I didn't have enough time. So I sort of got through the tutorial, was about starting to sort of like do the initial kind of sort of faction-y quests, missions and stuff, and like one update messed up my progress with one so that I'd run out of time to do it, so like one path was completely closed to my character, or at least in the early stages, which was annoying because it was one that I wanted to go with. And then, like, when I was trying to do things, it wasn't obvious how to do stuff. I caught on early on that I should shop around when I wanted to buy things, and that was about it.
I've got to admit, the one thing that has pushed me away from MMORPGs is the commitment.
People.
That to a certain extent, but the commitment involved,
you've got to be invested in it, haven't you?
Exactly, and
you can't dabble.
Exactly. So that's why I kind of preferred Team Fortress 2. That's the only MMO that kind of really matters to me in a way.
Well, because if the hat fits.
Yeah, because I mean, yes. Yeah. But basically, because it's kind of you drop in, you drop out, and you don't have like one kind of character that you have to level up or anything like that. It's it's a very it's an incredibly well balanced game. So no matter how much you play, you could be playing like 24 hours a day, getting all of the latest stuff and whatnot, and you know that in the end, it's your skills that are actually improving rather than your character.
Yeah, it's not the stats.
Yeah. that was the thing, like, with Eve. I was kind of getting to the situation where I was trying to play a little bit of it every evening. And then, you know, I had stuff going on and I couldn't do that. And then I remember I was at one of the last blog posts I wrote about my experience of it. I was kind of like, why the hell isn't there an official app so that I can at least manage things like skills training and maybe trading when I'm not in the main game? And the crazy thing is that, who is it that makes the game? I can't remember their name now. Is it CCP Games? Whoever, the guys behind Eve, they, back in 2011, said, oh yes, we're making an official app. Come the time I was playing the game in, May last year? May, June, or whatever? This official app hadn't appeared. There was, like, a couple of unofficial ones that might have tracked a couple of things, but you could look at stuff, but it didn't feed, the API didn't, you know, go back and kind of, like, allow you to interact with stuff that was actually happening to your character in game. And it was just,
which is mad. There's no reason why you couldn't.
I mean, the thing is that, I mean, because I was early on in the game anyway, like, a lot of my time for my character was being spent training up skill trees and stuff. And it's like, well, sure, I could queue so many progresses over sort of so many days, but actually what I really wanted was to be able to check on my character in those free moments I did have when I wasn't near my computer, when I was at, you know, in between sort of getting to and from work and stuff, and of course there's no official app, so I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
So in a way, there's the fact that some, if not all, MMORPGs have yet to actually catch up with the technology that they could be implementing outside of the core game in order to encourage people who are perhaps a bit busy, but would like to play the games.
I mean, we've actually known people that, you know, have been running like a business and, you know, got addicted to World of Warcraft and that became their life.
And the business died.
Yeah, the business just collapsed because they weren't paying enough attention to it.
Which is mad. That's just mad.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, sure, I mean, there's stuff always going around, certainly with MMORPGs that, oh, they're addictive and they can cause problems. And of course, most of the horror stories to do with sort of long hours of gameplay have been associated with MMORPGs, certainly in places like China and South Korea and stuff. But at the same time, it's not like,
and America with the whole
but it's not like, I like the idea of MMORPGs. I'm actually, you know, I'm quite keen on the idea of playing with or against other people on a sustained story.
I really like the idea of being able to control a character or a creature or a ship or whatever in a big virtual world. But the clunky realities of it get in the way.
You know what would be a huge draw for me if I was really into MMORPGs? Is if you could actually create your own quests to hand out to people.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Now, there might be something you can do like that in Star Trek Online. I'm really not sure.
Okay.
So I've only played a few hours of it, and there were a few things, you know, because I know a few people who do play it. You know, like, they've logged, you know, well over 200, 300 hours. And it's like, okay, I'm a Trek fan. I should really, you know, if anything is going to work, it's going to be Star Trek Online, and I should, you know, give it a go.
It should work, but for me, I think one of the other problems, like you said, is just time as well.
Yeah.
Because it is such a big investment.
Yeah.
At least it's not money, because, you know, seeing as so many of them have gone, you know, free to play, at least
a lot of them have.
But something like Eve hasn't. Yeah, it's still, you still it's either you subscribe and you pay your monthly debit, or you play in chunks for like so many months at a time, or you somehow are a genius and can earn enough IDSK or whatever it is that you can earn enough in-game credits to actually pay for your subscription.
Cool. Or you just sell it on eBay.
you could perhaps try doing that. I think they frown on that a little bit.
I'm going to go
sell dilithium on eBay.
That's another thing that boggles the mind for me.
Become a dilithium farmer.
It's the concept of selling virtual items for real money.
Mm.
So in the end, it's basically code.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of polygons and, you know, what have you.
But also the amount of time that's also often gone into it. You're essentially, it's some weird commoditization of time that's represented in the item, because it's usually stuff that people haven't made. It's stuff that they've had to spend massive amounts of their time in order to get. So that's a bit.
And then obviously there's you know, doing stuff like, I think it was macros or something like that, where, you know, you have like, you get an automatic action kind of being performed that'll level you up so that you can basically just, you know, stick your computer on, you know, leave and, you know, come back, you know, 20 hours later or something like that, and it's leveled up, you know, 5 levels or something.
Wasn't that Star Wars Galactic Empire that did that?
I'm 100% sure.
I think it was that and Warhammer.
Yeah.
Warhammer.
Wasn't
it?
Mm. Warcraft. Whatever.
Yes.
They're all the same.
there's several reasons which I think keep most of us from actually becoming regular pursuers of MMORPGs. I think now at the moment, the one thing that might test my resolve not to really go near them, and I'm not sure if the beta is still open for sort of applying, but the Elder Scrolls Online.
Yeah.
Oh God, no! That could be the death of me. If anything's going to be, you know, the last thing we knew, he turned on his computer and said he's just going to give it a quick go.
Never to be seen again.
Have you noticed though? A lot of RPGs seem to have gone that way. There seem to have been either rumors or actual games that are like Final Fantasy. You know, traditional kind of turn-based, going into more action orientation, and then bam, it's into MMORPG.
Yeah.
And, you know, those rumours of a Fallout MMO. Now that we've got Elder Scrolls.
Which is definitely MMO. Happening, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
The other thing
I would like them to be separate, but...
But, I mean, the other thing that puts me off a little bit as well, and this is being really old-fashioned, like I normally am, but for me, a game is you play the game, you get to the end, it's a full story, you get to enjoy the story, enjoy the characters and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't really that in an MMORPG, is there really? There isn't really a fundamental story, you're just going on crest after crest after crest.
It depends on the game, because after all, something like, if someone could do an infinite Fallout, or an infinite Skyrim, something like that, it would be...
Just to make an observation of Eve, it did seem like you could go on forever because of the fact that even though it was in space and everything, actually the economical systems and the businesses that were set up, all that kind of like almost like real world stuff, but it's in space. Is actually what kept people going back to it, is what keeps people going back to it. And at the same time, it's kind of like, well, there's not many games where setting up an entire virtual economy is a huge part of it.
Oh yeah, I'm not dissing it. It's just that I personally like to have an end to it. I want to be able to play it, go through the story, get to the end and say, "Ooh, that was a good story. I like that. That was a happy ending." Or, "Bastards, why did they do that?"
Well, for you, Monsieur Cookie, I would prescribe a reasonable co-op game.
Yeah, I like co-op.
Isn't there supposed to be a definite end to the storyline in Star Wars Old Republic?
There might be. I haven't investigated.
Which I was tempted with that. I just haven't got a machine that will run the bloody thing.
Yeah, I'll say it again. Why did you make that an MMO? Why couldn't you just do that single player? God's sake.
I love Star Wars Old Republic and...
Knights of the Old Republic.
Knights of the Old Republic. They were brilliant games. They were the games that got me hooked on BioWare. I was hooked with BioWare, and I loved everything they brought out. Jade Empire, you know, everything.
What, Chinese Star Wars?
Yeah, I still enjoyed it, to be fair, yeah.
Oh, I still liked it. I just got to a point and stopped playing. Probably really near the end, but... I just,
I would really, really love a new Star Wars The Old Republic single player game, which just you know, brings the whole universe back into it for me.
It's just with them doing an MMO and saying it had enough content for, what did they say at the time, about, you know, two or three KOTOR games.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
If they would have cost £40 each, I would have happily have handed over £120.
Yeah, definitely.
To play, you know, three more KOTOR games. I would have been ecstatic to do that. Absolutely fine. More, you know, especially if you still had Bastilla.
But to be fair, even if they added like two player co-op or something, I would have probably been fine with that, as long as I had somebody to play it with.
Yeah.
You know. And they've successfully gone from, you know, a definite, you know, a purchase of, you know, however many they could have, you know, split it off into, if they'd have been in a similar length to the original KOTORs, to, I am not touching that with yours. With it being an MMO. And the idea of, you had to buy the MMO and then you had to subscribe to it.
Yeah.
And now, you know, at least they've said, no, you know, free to play up until a certain level. We're going
to
try and get people hooked on microtransactions and, you know, things like that. And say, well, okay, just so long as I can complete the storyline. I've got no interest in living my life in that universe. The entire idea of going into a Star Wars universe by BioWare would be for the story.
Yes.
Yeah. Definitely. And I think, I suppose, in a way, that what a lot of the MMORPGs that are around fail on is story, because of the constant pursuit of quests. It does seem to be a case that narrative isn't highly placed on the agenda.
Yeah.
So story's kind of lacking.
That's the thing, though. I mean, with MMOs in general, I think they're really well designed, because obviously they're designed to keep players coming, over and over and over again. But it's, to a certain extent, I think it's the RPG element, the kind of leveling up, the kind of, oh, I must get to the next level.
Well, it's not just that, but it's RPG stands for role-playing game, and unless there's such an element that you're actually feeling like you're living the role, which technically a narrative allows, because even in everyday life, actually you've got your own narrative of what's going on in your life. So, you know, you live your life as a story, it's your story. If that's not there in a game that isn't a puzzle game or a platformer or a racing game, so if you can't easily put in your own story, or you're not given one naturally, then it actually become quite boring. Because you're living a role and not living a role.
The thing with, you know, what the way I see it is that if you compare them to, you know, well, you know, games that have really got their claws into me, but are narratively driven, things like Mass Effect, Fallout, Skyrim, Oblivion, Morrowind. Now, those games, with Mass Effect, you don't really have the choice. You know, you have to go with the narrative. It's more of a, you know, traditional RPG in that sense. But when it comes to the sandbox Bethesda games, then it's up to you.
Yeah,
you know, it dumps you in the game, but if you want, you know, when they say, we will go to the castle, head north, if you bugger off east, and never go north, then that's entirely up to you. You know, the narrative can be there if you want, and that's great. So I kind of get the impression that if an MMO like that came along, then it could be quite dangerous to me, especially if, you know, they did, what's wrong with the idea of doing seasons? So, you know, you could play for, you know, a good few months and, you know, play through one season of a narrative,
yeah,
in a strong narrative arc. And then that could be over with, and then you can just potter around and do whatever you want or not bother. And then when it comes to, you know, next year or, you know, in 6 months' time or whatever, season two starts and there's this plot arc. That could work for me. That could be...
It would also...
If any MMO, you know, makers are listening to this, please don't do that. Because it would be a very bad thing for me.
But at the same time, that actually would make sense to have it as sort of seasonal arcs, because in theory that would be enough time for writers to write that, and hopefully for developers to create that.
Yeah.
One would hope.
They might have kind of done that in Star Trek again, from, you know, what people have said. You know, because they've added extra things that can happen. But it's still, yeah, to me, the whole problem with playing the Star Trek MMO is that it feels too MMO and not enough Star Trek.
Fair enough, yeah.
I think I'm going to have to wind this up now, but just so that everyone can perhaps understand why we decided to talk about this, other than the fact that Elder Scrolls has got has had sign-ups so far. It's because of the 3,000-plus player-versus-player battle that happened on Eve at the end of last month, and the epic video that subsequently surfaced of the assault.
Now, I'd quite like to have a look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll be providing a link with this episode of that video. But yeah, it was pretty insane the battle that happened, and it was all because various factions realised that a faction they weren't too happy with had accidentally kind of gone into their territory.
Oh no, Turf War. They were wearing the wrong colours and the wrong kind of sneakers.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing to watch. I mean, the video is quite long, but it gets pretty intense about halfway through. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Anyway, so that's it for this week. So, it's good night from...
It's a good night from me. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
And it's good night from me, Paul, a.k.a. OneArmed_Cookie on Twitter. And you can also find me lurking around thegamejar.com.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett, Paul Blewett on Twitter, and I've got a website, paul-blewett.com.
And it's good night from me, Emily. I'm EK6891 on Twitter, and you can find me on my website at ek-creations.com. You can also find us over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. We're on iTunes if you want to go and subscribe there as well. We're on Twitter at nerdspodcast. You can find us on Facebook at Nerds Assemble Podcast and on Google Plus at Nerds Assemble Podcast. And also one important piece of news. On the 18th of February, we should hopefully have Greenwing, Smack the Pony, Bob the Builder, Sean the Sheep, Campus Rota, and Uber Geek, James Henry, as a guest on the podcast. So if you've got any questions that you want to start sort of coming in for us to ask him, then please do. Obviously, you can ask us on on Twitter, on Facebook, or whatever. With a couple of other contact options on the website. So yeah, start getting those questions in, and we will ask that which we hope James won't kick us over the head for, because he's actually coming to Paul and Mine's house. Hopefully,
wait, there's a possibility for him kicking us in the head?
Well, he's taller than us.
That doesn't mean that there's a possibility that he'll kick us in the head.
Well, he was quite...
Just get the drill out. Don't worry about it.
He was quite specific about there having to be coffee. So,
We've got plenty of coffee.
Yeah, but what if we ask bad questions?
What will anger the James Henry?
I don't know.
I've got a question. Who would win? Bob the Builder or MacGyver?
We'll get him to tell us later this month. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.